This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iraqis gather near the Baghdad airport to mark the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. A group of U.S. Republican senators say that they will object when Congress counts the Electoral College votes next week, a move which delays the final step in Joe Biden's election victory. And nearly 80 civilians are killed in simultaneous attacks in two villages in Niger near the border with Mali. Hello everyone and thanks for tuning in to World News. Iraqis have marked the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. People in the Iraqi capital Baghdad held a candlelit vigil near the city's airport. The ceremony took place at a site of a drone strike which took the lives of General Soleimani and al-Muhandis last January. Earlier on Saturday, the Iraqi people also hit the streets of Baghdad to mourn the two deaths. They chanted slogans demanding revenge for the killings. Iraqi demonstrators also renewed calls for the expulsion of U.S. forces from their country. Anti-American sentiments have been growing throughout Iraq since the U.S. assassination of Soleimani and al-Muhandis. Spokesperson for Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says that U.S. and Israeli forces have remained on high alert since General Soleimani's assassination.
An initial slap in the face of the enemy was Iran's missile strikes against the U.S.'s Ain al-Assad base in Iraq before General Soleimani was laid to rest. Ever since the operation, American and Israeli terrorist forces have remained on full alert. Military personnel know that the state of being on high alert means a slap in the face of the U.S.
IRGC spokesperson said that Iran will pursue the U.S. assassination of Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis through legal channels in Iraq and Iran. Ramazan Sharif stressed Iran reserves the right to take military revenge against the architects of the assassination and those who carry the crime out. Iranian military commander Major General Yahya Rahim Safavi says General Soleimani played a leading role in creating stability and security in West Asia. Safavi made the comment during an exclusive interview with Press TV on the first anniversary of the assassination of General Soleimani. So let's take a listen to other comments made by Major General Safavi.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, I offer my condolences to all Muslim nations in the region on the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. What has caused instability and insecurity in West Asia in recent years started from the barbaric U.S. invasion and occupation of Afghanistan in 2001 and its occupation of Iraq 2 years later. The existence of the Zionist regime is also a destabilizing factor and a source of insecurity in the Middle East. Petrodollars of some Arab countries were used to give birth to the Daesh terror group in line with the U.S. policies and to cause instability and insecurity in Syria and Iraq. So these Arab countries have also fueled instability in the region. But General Qasem Soleimani, as well as policies and measures adopted by Iran's Supreme National Security Council, along with plans by a leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, were effective in responding to threats against the Syrian and Iraqi governments. All these helped defeat the miscreant Daesh terror. All these helped defeat the miscreant Daesh group, which was created by U.S. and Zionist spy agencies. General Soleimani defeated U.S. strategies in the battlefield. mean, they were after instability, but with God's help, some political stability was brought in Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria. The United States and Israel were after insecurity, but General Soleimani restored security and stability in the region.
And Iranian academics have marked the first anniversary of the assassination of top commander General Qasem Soleimani. They also called for studies to be made on the personality of the general, who serves as a role model for the youth. Salman Kujuri reports.
Tehran University has held a ceremony to mark the anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's Minister of Science and Technology, who was attending the ceremony, said that universities and academic centers have great capacities to keep the path of Qasem Soleimani alive by studying different aspects of his personality and beliefs.
General Qasem Soleimani was a great person. His personality had different aspects. I believe that academic centers should study his behaviors and personality. I think his lifestyle and beliefs serve as a good role model for all the youth of our country and the world. We have great capacities and potentials at universities and academic centers in this regard.
The event in Tehran came as people and officials attended a ceremony in the city of Kerman, the burial place of General Qasem Soleimani, to remember his lofty status 1 year after his martyrdom.
The martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani had a big impact on the minds of people, both because of his own personality and what happened after his martyrdom. Therefore, for a researcher and expert of social sciences, his martyrdom provides a wide range of topics to study.
General Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, and his trench mate Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were assassinated along with their companions in a U.S. terror drone strike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Meanwhile, in response, the IRGC targeted the U.S. airbase of Ain al-Assad in Anbar province in western Iraq to retaliate the U.S. assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Moreover, according to Iranian officials, Tehran has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. for assassinating General Soleimani, and soon a court session will be held in Iran in this regard. Iranian officials believe that more than anything, the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has proved to the global public opinion that the U.S. administration is the leading sponsor of terrorism in the world. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Sorry, Sepahbu Elrik is a political commentator who says that General Soleimani was fighting America's terrorists, which sought to expand U.S. influence in the region.
It was fighting America's terrorists. Now, why does America have these terrorists? Because then it has a pretext for expansion, for placing itself in other people's countries. And General Soleimani obviously fought these terrorists. And I think that was the reason behind it. And they were foolish enough to believe that by killing General Soleimani and taking out Mohandas, that they would weaken Iran and its resolve. But again, this is because of the lack of understanding of the culture. You do not destroy an ideology, and the only ideology that ushers in hope for the future of mankind, because if you do want to have peace on this earth, you find yourself fighting on the side of justice, of peace, which is what Soleimani and Mohandas were doing.
Yemenis have commemorated the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Iran's Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, who were among the most important pillars of resistance in the region. Our Yemen correspondent has your story.
In gratitude for their sacrifices in confronting America, Israel, and the Ottomans in the region, Yemenis held an event to commemorate the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in the presence of the Iranian ambassador and representatives of the Islamic Resistance Movement.
Today, we live on the martyrdom anniversary of the two leaders, Soleimani and al-Muhandis. Remember the positions of these two heroes to stand by the nation's causes. Haj Qasem Soleimani gave himself to Palestine and the resistance, and was intransigent in front of the projects of the Zionist enemy, through which it wants to break up the region.
The participants recalled the actions of the martyr Soleimani and how he terrified America and Israel, which thought by assassinating him to weaken the resistance forces, but contrary, it lit a fire that would not be extinguished until the liberation of Jerusalem al-Quds and the demise of global arrogance.
We commemorate the two great martyrs, Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Muhandis, who strived for God's cause and are loyal to God and did what they were required to do. God gave them wisdom and strength. They were great people and we should follow their path.
The martyr Soleimani was an icon in the face of the Zionist entity and its projects. He played a great role in supporting the Palestinian resistance movement and stood by the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces in its battles with Daesh in Iraq. Once again, Yemenis have taken a resolve to continue the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani in the face of years of aggression against the impoverished nation by Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies and their Western backers. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
January the 3rd marks the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani. So while people are mourning his death, many are reflecting on his significance, such as how he eradicated terrorism and supported Palestinians. Many have also seen the true nature of the U.S. after it assassinated a man who was key in defeating Daesh terrorists.
On the morning of January the 3rd, 2020, the world woke up to the news that top Iranian commander, Qasem Soleimani, had been martyred in Baghdad by a US drone strike, killing General Soleimani and his entourage. The assassination came as Lieutenant General Soleimani had arrived in Iraq at the invitation of the Iraqi government as part of his ongoing mission to fight terrorism in the region, terrorism that saw the Daesh group firmly in the sights of the Iranian military hero. The killing of General Soleimani was unlawful, as UN rapporteur Agnes Callamard clearly pointed out in her report following the assassination, suggesting a legal case against the perpetrators was the way forward. With the ultimate decision to perform the strike on the convoy of General Soleimani lying solely at the feet of the US president, it seems that Iran has a clear case against Trump for the charge of a war crime, as there was no justification for the killing, as confirmed in the UN report. However, the fact that the assassination took place and very little has been done on an international scale to condemn the murder, it appears to have given a green light to other nations to take illegal actions against Iran, in particular the recent example of the killing of Iranian scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, with officials stating that there had been strong indications that the Israeli regime had been involved in the attack.
Yes, certainly there has to be accountability for this violent and illegal assassination of General Soleimani. The United States, of course, has always felt it is above the law. It doesn't have to maintain any kind of respect for international law or human rights. And that is one of the reasons that the Donald Trump administration proceeded with this assassination. However, this sends the wrong message to the world community. If the United States can get away with it, then anyone can get away with it. So this must be pursued in the international courts. It's interesting to see that Iran is doing just that.
Yet as the anniversary approaches and ultimately passes, Iran has clearly stated that it will pursue its legal duty to fight for justice for the assassination of General Soleimani, and the memory of the talented and much respected general will live on forever in the hearts of those seeking to continue his mission of making the region a safer place to live.
Now the targeted killing of General Qasem Soleimani is deemed illegal based on international law. Iran has opened a war crimes case against the U.S. president. Tehran says it will pursue the case in the International Criminal Court at The Hague. The U.S. said it killed General Soleimani because he posed an imminent threat. But Washington has failed to provide any evidence to support that claim. President Donald Trump himself stated that he ordered Soleimani's assassination. Therefore, he needs to be prosecuted for this illegal act. It's a matter of time that Trump will be prosecuted or not, but if there is no accountability, then other nations could view the inaction as a green light to assassinate key political figures or officials of other countries.
The humiliating defeat for Donald Trump that saw Joe Biden sweep to a landslide victory is a sign of just how poor the decisions made have been perceived by the people of the US. Yet as the commander-in-chief of the US military, his decision to call the strike on General Soleimani was a decision that severely dented his international reputation. But as his last few days in office approach, US boats in the Persian Gulf have started maneuvers in the region, suggesting that Trump is looking for one last act of power prior to his departure, believing that until now, he's gotten away with his heinous acts. But for Iran, the most wicked act of all has yet to be dealt with. The assassination of General Soleimani has yet to see Iran take revenge for the murder, and is something that Iran has stated cannot be rushed and will happen in a matter of time.
I think we can say that currently Iran is taking action against the United States by pursuing this assassination in the courts. Someone must be held responsible and accountable for the assassination. Iran is going through the proper channels to do so. That is certainly one method that Iran can take to rectify this situation. The United States, on the other hand, if it's going to invade Iran, it's going to happen in the next 19 days, which is the last of Donald Trump's administration. While I don't expect things will improve greatly under a Biden administration, they will certainly improve somewhat, probably to the reinstatement of the JCPOA.
But for Lieutenant General Soleimani, the hero of people from across the region and the rest of the world, his ongoing work is being continued by devoted followers and freedom fighters from Iraq to Syria and Palestine to Yemen, and this continuation will be one of the best forms of revenge. Furthermore, with General Soleimani being a champion of fighting terrorism in the region, as well as resisting the US presence in the area, it seems that the sweetest revenge of all has been the victory over the US-backed Daesh group and the American assets in the region leaving the area, providing a safe, free and healthy living environment for the people of the region.
A dozen U.S. senators say that they will not vote to certify President-elect Joe Biden's election victory come next week. Headed by Senator Ted Cruz, group said in a statement that they will oppose Biden's certification due to numerous allegations of fraud and irregularities in last November's election. More than 100 Republicans in the House of Representatives reportedly plan to make a similar move when Congress meets on January 6th to formally count votes cast by the Electoral College. President Donald Trump has urged supporters to take to the streets of Washington, D.C. on the same day to protest the results. Meanwhile, Trump's far-right supporters clash with police in Oregon State's capital, Salem. The demonstrators also protested against health restrictions, echoed Donald Trump's claims of vote fraud by the Democrats. The president has refused to concede defeat and has repeatedly claimed the election was rigged. Trump and his allies have lost dozens of court efforts to try to seek a reversal of the election results. Nearly 80 people have reportedly been killed in two separate attacks in southwestern Niger, near the border with Mali. Security forces say nearly 50 people were killed and over 20 others wounded in one village, and then a simultaneous attack left around 30 dead in another village. Still unclear who's behind the deadly attacks. West African nation previously suffered attacks by militants linked to Al-Qaeda and Daesh. Hundreds of people were killed last year in attacks which hit Niger's western border with Mali and Burkina Faso and southeastern border with Nigeria. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Experts with the World Health Organization are warning that the next pandemic may be more severe if the international community does not learn from the ongoing coronavirus crisis and prepare accordingly. This pandemic has been very severe. It has affected every corner of this planet, but this is not necessarily the big one. Dr. Mike Ryan, head of the WHO Emergencies Program, told the press during a year-end briefing recently. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jake Johnson Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Calling COVID-19 Crisis a Wake-Up Call. WHO experts warn next pandemic could be even worse. Here's the details of this article. The COVID-19 pandemic has officially infected more than 80 million people and killed at least 1.7 million across the globe, and the daily death toll remains high in the U.S. and other major nations. But even in the face of such staggering figures, experts with the World Health Organization are warning that the next pandemic may be more severe if the international community does not learn from the ongoing coronavirus crisis and prepare accordingly. This pandemic has been very severe. It has affected every corner of this planet, but this is not necessarily the big one. Dr. Mike Ryan, head of WHO Emergencies Program, told the press during a year-end briefing recently. This is a wake-up call. We are learning now how to do things better. Science, logistics, training, and governance. How to communicate better. But the planet is fragile. We live in an increasingly complex global society, Ryan added. These threats will continue. If there is one thing we need to take from this pandemic, with all of the tragedy and loss, is we need to get our act together. We need to honor those we've lost by getting better at what we do every day. Ryan's remarks came as nations across the globe continued rolling out and administering COVID-19 vaccines in massive inoculation campaigns that have sparked fears of vaccine apartheid as rich countries swallow up much of the existing supply of doses. According to an analysis released earlier this month by the People's Vaccine Alliance, that is PVA, 90% of the populations of nearly 74 countries will likely not be vaccinated in 2021 due to vaccine hoarding by wealthy nations. During the briefing, WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom called the development of safe and effective vaccines an incredible scientific achievement, but added that the United Nations agency will not rest until those in need everywhere have access to the new vaccines and are protected. Even as effective vaccines begin to be put to use, Professor David Heymann, chair of the WHO's Strategic and Technical Advisory Group for Infectious Hazards, cautioned recently that COVID-19 could become endemic and continue to mutate as it reproduces in human cells, especially in areas of more intense admission. this one new COVID-19 variant that happens to be more transmissible, but not necessarily more deadly, was recently detected in the United Kingdom and has since been found in more than a dozen other nations. Experts say the existing vaccines should be effective against the new variant. While the variant has not officially been detected in the U.S., Health and Human Services Assistant Secretary Brett Durerer said recently that the strain is likely present in the country, which has the highest COVID-19 death toll in the world. Heyman predicted that the likely scenario is the virus will become another endemic virus that will remain somewhat of a threat, but a very low-level threat in the context of an effective global vaccination program. Fortunately, Heyman added, we have tools to save lives, and these, in combination with good public health, will permit us to learn to live with COVID-19.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. Stay tuned.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English. This is Viewpoints. Here in the studio today, we have with us Sayyid Mahdi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Yeah. And Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam
wa rahmatullah. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So, the world has changed, and it's not going to change back again after the shahadat of General Qasem Soleimani. And that's what we're going to be discussing today, particularly about the international coverage of the funeral. And I'd like to take Sayyid Mehdi's viewpoint into consideration as we begin the discussion. So what are your immediate reactions to the kind of the international coverage of the funeral?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I think there's two aspects here to the international coverage, right? One is the international assuming you're talking about media coverage.
Right, yeah.
The international media coverage as regards to the West and the censorship and, of course, the misinformation and misguidance which was being done and is still being done on a very large scale is one side of the story. But the other side of the story is the international media coverage that was done by sources who are not subjugated or who are not the servants of the Western agenda. So, you know, and I guess in the eastern part of the world, you saw that there was a lot of media coverage on this assassination, on this martyrdom of Haj Qasem Soleimani. What was interesting was that the mourning that was conducted for Shahid Qasem Soleimani was really something that was unseen for a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that.
I think that the closest thing that would come would be the funeral of Imam Khomeini.
Right, I've seen people making that comparison between this and the funeral of Imam Khomeini. Am I mistaken to say that that was the biggest funeral in history?
If you look at the history and history of Iran, especially. Imam Khomeini's funeral was so big and so huge and so populated that nobody could even come close to that sort of a funeral after Imam Khomeini passed away. The world, and especially Iran, has seen, after all these years, after like 30-plus years, the biggest funeral after that of Imam Khomeini's, and that was General Qasem Soleimani, who was not the Wali of Faqih, of course. He was not, you know, somebody who went to the Hawza, for instance, and was a very senior Islamic scholar. He was just a general, right? But there was something special about him that it pulled the hearts towards the streets, and people came out mourning and expressing their anger, more importantly, against America.
Yeah, I mean, considering that the population of Iran has pretty much doubled since the time of Imam Khomeini, people are even saying that this funeral, in terms of numbers, was even bigger.
Probably, yeah. I wouldn't refute that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the statistics, but I would say that that's pretty precise. Streets were filled, even like huge roads, like five lanes, where normally the cars would drive in parallel. They were packed, jam-packed for kilometers. And this is not just one city.
Iran. Video is that aerial view. I think it's off Tehran, where you can see these people, and they do look like ants. And it just goes on and on and on. Sayyid Mahdi actually mentioned that it's like Arba'in. All over again. Exactly. It was fascinating.
Yeah, you could feel it. You know, it was people. They wanted to make sure that they expressed themselves, that this heinous crime that America had committed, and the sacrifices of a person like General Qasem Soleimani, a person of his stature, a person of his spirituality, a person of his military skills, a person who is a strategic. And at the same time, a very wise person who knows when to make a move, right? He was not just all out in the battlefield, shooting and, fighting. Mm. No, he knew when to make a move. A person of his stature and experience, people wanted to make sure that they give and send out a very clear message to the entire world, let it be the world governments or, just the average people, that he was loved in Iran. He was loved not just in Iran, even beyond Iran's borders, and we're going to talk further about it, how other countries and cities played into it.
Another interesting thing, though, what you find here is you see, again, as Sheikh Ali was saying, that millions really mourned for this individual, for this great personality of Islam. For example, we saw specifically in the city of Qom, we saw that it wasn't just Iranians who came out to mourn him, but it was people from all nations. I mean, you saw people from Pakistan, Afghanistan, you saw Iraqis, right, from Bangladesh. I mean, you name it.
Chinese were there.
Chinese people were there. Westerners were there.
So black brothers, white brothers.
It was very amazing sisters. To witness this.
Myself.
This international mourning for an individual. And to be honest with you, I think that perhaps in Qasem Soleimani's own mind, he probably didn't imagine that this international level of humanity will come to mourn him.
Subhanallah.
Right?
I mean, if I can just chime in, people like him, they're not really concerned.
They're not.
To them, it doesn't matter because they're so godly people. Their focus is God only.
Right.
And this is where we have traditions, Islamic traditions, which say that if you love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah plants your love in the hearts of people. And this is exactly what we witnessed.
Right.
These people didn't even know his language, many of them.
Yeah.
If you look at other countries, how they protested, candlelight vigils. I know it happened in Canada. It happened in UK. Multiple cities of U.S. and Australia, Germany. It was a very weird phenomena, and I think we never expected it.
No, it was very surreal, right?
When we went
to see this, it was really surreal because it was men, there was women, there was children, there was old people. I mean, it was amazing. People brought their. I personally saw a family who had brought a newborn. Right? I mean, the kid must have not... It was a baby, not more than 6 months old, right?
Yeah.
They brought them, and they came in the millions. And not just the people. If you look, all political factions came from all across the political scenario. Again, various nations, and even when you look at, for example, international personalities that gave their condolences. For example, you have Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah of Hezbollah in Lebanon. Mm. Haji Qasim Soleimani, he was very close to Sayyid Nasrullah. And you can see in some of the speeches of Sayyid Nasrullah that he was really hurt. You know, he was saddened by this. Just as the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, if you're able to access the video of him leading the funeral rites, the prayer of Qasim Soleimani, you'll see that he's crying, right? It was amazing. You saw that all these people cried for this great personality.
Okay, now we know that it was definitely surreal, and I like that word because I remember it was feeling like a dream. It was strange. It was like, whoa, is this really happening? Could there possibly be this many people? When I was upset on the morning that I found out, and you go out into the streets and you see people crying on the streets in groups.
And they're wearing black.
And, you know, they weren't...
It's very symbolic in Iran, right? When you wear black, it's like...
Okay, so now the enemy, on the other hand, because we're talking about the coverage, right, the international coverage. Would you say, in your opinion, that considering the magnitude of this event as it occurred, did the mainstream media give it due justice or not?
Well, that's for sure, and it's not just us here who are realizing that. I'm in touch with many activists from throughout the world, from the East and from the West. The mainstream media, of course, they did a huge injustice by misrepresenting who General Qasim Soleimani was. Uh-huh. They had a very strict agenda of making sure that they bring a bad name and bad coverage to Iran and the Islamic Revolution and the system of Wilayatul Faqih. And, you know, they're the enemies, so what do you expect? At the same time, one, at least in the past, used to have hope when it came to social media that, okay, it had some sort of a liberty where you can go to, like, maybe an extra step where you can get the truth and justice and the word of haq and truth out there. But unfortunately, this particular event, I've noticed very closely that the social media, even, they made sure that they suppress any voice of support of General Qasim Soleimani, voice of support for Iran, for the Islamic resistance, or even the resistance forces and the factions around the globe.
Right.
So they went as far as that if you were to post a picture of Qasim Soleimani, this great martyr, this shaheed, who actually fought ISIS, who fought terrorism in this region, they would delete your profile. This is how far they went.
So much
for freedom of speech and expression, right?
Right.
You're not allowed to express your own sentiments.
Mint Press News actually reported that Silicon Valley giant Facebook announced that it would be deleting all positive posts about assassinated Iranian general.
Up until that point, they were unofficially doing that. You know, they were just doing it from their back room. But then it got to a level that it just got out of control.
Yeah.
The people, the general masses, average social media users, and if you are on social media, you would say, like, people have changed their display pictures on their WhatsApp.
Yeah.
People who are not even Iranians.
If you haven't done it, you should do it.
Right? Now, this all of it was actually getting out of control, so it pushed them so far back that they had to come out clean, and they said, okay, we're going to put the foot down because social media is what we own. We're going to make sure that anybody who puts out... So it's basically a threat to the general masses.
Right.
That if you put a picture of General Qasim Soleimani, even if it's a picture where he's smiling, we're not talking about guns and we're not talking about all that.
Yeah.
They said that we're going to delete it. So they are actually threatening people. And they ended up deleting the profiles.
I mean,
and countless profiles, not just people who are Shias or Sunnis or Muslims, even the non-Muslims who were voicing their support for General Qasim Soleimani and against America, the injustice that America has done, the oppression that it is continuing to do, they're deleting their profiles.
I think what an interesting point here, for example, is that for people who believe that the media is free and open in the West, I think this is a very clear signal to everyone that without a doubt there is no liberty of speech in the West, there is no free media in the West. Even, you know, as Sheikh Ali said, that we thought that social media platforms would give you an amount of freedom. By these recent actions, we have seen, no, that truly even these social media platforms and the news is in the control of certain factions who don't want the truth to come out for the people.
Yeah, I mean, we also, yeah, I just wanted to point out that, let's take this in a positive spin, these guys are actually threatened by
well,
us.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It used to be like that, as Sayyid Mahdi mentioned, you know, there was a certain level of extended freedom, you know, for people to express their views, and that was the primary philosophy behind social media, that you contribute.
Popularity.
You get to say you have a say. You get to express yourself, right?
YouTube.
However you want to, right? Mm. But they're actually tightening it up. And you know what the reason is? The reason is they have lost the battle.
Right.
They thought that they're going to be able to give this perceived freedom to the people. Huh. And as a result of this, people are going to be like, oh, wow, West is so open about everything. Well, guess what? People started to speak their mind, and now all of these social media platforms, the mainstream ones owned by CIA or, you know, the Western Zionist media empire, they're threatened now that they can't face this flood of people online. They can't fight back. So what do? They just, you know, silence them by deleting their profiles and pages.
Right. And yet, despite all of this, I'd just like to point out, they have not been able to suppress the spirit of the people.
Right, and this is where, if you notice, you know, throughout the world right now, after the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, the profile pictures tell you, everybody is saying, we are Soleimani, I am Soleimani, I am able to and ready to retaliate against America's oppression, the Zionist regime, the Wahhabi Takfiri agenda in the region. You know, people are expressing these views through their just profile pictures. You don't speak words. You go look at their status even on WhatsApp, right, or other social media platform. You would get this very loud and clear message that we are Soleimani. And when it comes to, you know, a replacement for General Qasem Soleimani, do you know what Allah had saved in his treasures to replace him? It's General Kaani. General Kaani is who replaced General Qasem Soleimani. Although it's a huge blow that we took, and the camp of resistance has taken, and especially the leader of the Muslim Ummah with the loss of General Qasem Soleimani. But General Kaani, he is a mastermind. He was behind, you know, chalking out this whole plan to destroy ISIS.
And I'd love to talk about that more, and I'm really excited. I want to know more about General Kaani, because I don't know much about him. I don't even know if I pronounce his name right. Kaani. But that's all we have time for today. We hope that you enjoyed and benefited from today's show, inshallah. If you have any questions or queries, or you want to see any of our other content, you can visit pasttoday.com. And we'll see you next time, inshallah. From myself, Sayyid Mahdi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please, don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. Representative Louie Gohmert became the latest Republican to file a long-shot lawsuit attempting to reverse President-elect Joe Biden's victory, this time by suing Vice President Mike Pence. The last-ditch legal effort filed recently came from Louie Gohmert, an eight-term congressman from Texas, along with 11 Arizona residents who had been nominated by the state's Republican Party to serve as electors. It comes over a week before Mike Pence is scheduled to preside over a joint session of Congress where the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden and President Donald Trump will be tallied up. Electors had already cast their votes 2 weeks earlier. Joe Biden received 306 electoral votes, 36 more than he needed to win, whilst Donald Trump received 232. The lawsuit asked federal judge Jeremy Knoddel, a Trump appointee in eastern Texas, to declare that Mike Pence has the exclusive authority and sole discretion to decide which electoral votes from a given state should be counted. While pro-Trump electors in some states, Biden won, have symbolically cast their own ballots, experts say those votes carry no legal weight. The Republican complaint claims that part of the 1887 Electoral Count Act should be declared unconstitutional as it clashes with the 12th Amendment. The lawsuit claims that amendment contains the exclusive dispute resolution mechanisms, including that Vice President Mike Pence determines which slate of electors' votes count, or neither, for that state. Legal scholars quickly dismissed the Republican lawsuit as hopelessly far-fetched. We're prepared for you an article written by Michael D'Antonio, the author of the book Never Enough, Donald Trump and the Pursuit of Success, and co-author with Peter Eisner of the book High Crimes, the Corruption, Impunity and Impeachment of Donald Trump. The piece is titled The Humiliation of Mike Pence. Please stay with us for more of Michael D'Antonio's article. The four-year humiliation of U.S. Vice President Mike Pence is reaching a crescendo. One-term President Donald Trump, who lost the 2020 election to Joe Biden by over 7 million votes, is reportedly pressuring Mike Pence to take steps to overturn the will of the people. He seems to think the Vice President could perform his duty when Congress meets to certify the results on 6th of January. Fortunately, the U.S. Constitution offers Mike Pence no way to stop the process as he presides over the joint session of the House of Representatives and the Senate next week, a process that Joe Biden presided over 4 years ago when Donald Trump's victory was certified. Nevertheless, Mike Pence could aid Republicans as they deliver speeches that will delay the outcome and add to the sense among Trump loyalists that he was cheated out of re-election. In doing so, Mike Pence could stake his claim to the Trump legacy and get a boost for his own political future. Thus, his seemingly absolute commitment to the president could finally be rewarded. To be fair, Mike Pence's tenure as vice president has looked like a continuous show of servility. When he wasn't offering over-the-top praise to Trump and his policy choices, he stood at his side beaming, with a kind of adoring expression that recalled Nancy Reagan's appreciative look towards her husband, former President Ronald Reagan. It is worth remembering that Mike Pence was offered the vice president job in part because of his appeal to vast numbers of evangelical voters who will be reassured by his presence alongside the profane, thrice-married Donald Trump. However, the sycophant's role would have been part of the deal for anyone who agreed to join the ticket. Always the center of attention, Donald Trump would never make room in the spotlight for anyone else. Mike Pence accepted and kept his commitment. His loyalty tested and unbroken, Pence's fate was sealed. Trump's defeat should have signaled that Pence's reward, his own rise as the GOP's leading 2024 presidential candidate, was at hand. Instead, he's had to suffer a bit longer as the press reports that the president is angry with him for failing to work harder at overturning the election. According to the political news website Axios, Donald Trump was angered when the Lincoln Project posted a video saying Mike Pence was abandoning him. Viewed by 1.3 million people, it begins with the words, "The end is coming, Donald. Even Mike Pence knows it." The video ends with the message, "On 6th of January, Mike Pence will put the nail in your political coffin when he presides over the Senate vote to prove Joe Biden won. It's over, and Mike Pence knows it." Having served 12 years in Congress and 4 years as governor of Indiana, Mike Pence surely knows how the electoral process works, and that he and Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. Furthermore, 4 years as vice president has surely taught him that in the president's reality, what matters now is who will join him in the bizarre effort to overturn the election result. Despite the Lincoln Project advertisement, Mike Pence has still taken steps to show his commitment to Donald Trump. Recently, Pence jetted to West Palm Beach in Florida, where he promised a crowd of conservative youth that, "We're going to keep fighting until every legal vote is counted. We're going to keep fighting until every illegal vote is thrown out." He also urged the young voters to stay in the fight against election fraud. As he pledged himself to the president's baseless cause and declared there was a battle to be won over election integrity, Mike Pence showed himself to be roughly Trump's equal when it comes to their interpretations about the country's controversial voting system. Despite claims, many from Republicans, of election fraud, they couldn't present any evidence, and their effort to prove that it exists in any pervasive sense have failed. Although Donald Trump's commission on the subject failed to find evidence of meaningful fraud and disbanded a year after being formed, this reality check has not removed the issue from the GOP agenda. Republicans, especially Donald Trump, kept selling the fraud claim, and some people have bought into it because they think this controversial election system, everything is possible. Before the election, the Pew Research Center found that 43% of Republicans and 25% of all those surveyed believe voter fraud to be a real problem when people voted by mail. According to an NPR PBS NewsHour Marist opinion poll post-election, only one quarter of Republicans say they trust the election results. With opinion polls showing the cries of fraud have worked, Mike Pence continued peddling the narrative, which only proved that he's as willing as Donald Trump to perpetuate the claim, at least where it might also serve his political end. It also shows how much he values Donald Trump's so-called loyal base, which, if measured by the votes cast in November, numbers more than 74 million. According to the website Politico, although Donald Trump has said he's considering a run in the 2024 presidential election, he's also said he might back away from this idea. This would make Mike Pence a front-runner for the next Republican ticket. Under these circumstances, now is not the time for him to break the bond. A man who regularly declares his faith, Mike Pence is hardly the type to become a political apostate, not with the paradise of the presidency in sight. Pence's dogged commitment to his wingman role may please certain Trump voters, but it doesn't mean the nomination or the White House will be his for the taking. Just consider the campaign banner displayed 2 months ago at an event in Nevada. What did it say? Don Jr. 2024. U.S. Representative Louie Gohmert became the latest Republican to file a long-shot lawsuit attempting to reverse President-elect Joe Biden's victory, this time by suing Vice President Mike Pence. The last-ditch legal effort, filed recently, came from Louie Gohmert, an 8-term congressman from Texas, along with 11 Arizona residents who had been nominated by the state's Republican Party to serve as electors. Mike Pence is scheduled to preside over the joint session of Congress, and the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden and President Donald Trump will be tallied up. Electors had already cast their votes 2 weeks earlier. Joe Biden received 306 electoral votes, 36 more than he needed to win, whilst Donald Trump received just 232. The lawsuit asked federal judge Jeremy Knoddle, a Trump appointee in eastern Texas, to declare that Mike Pence has the exclusive authority and sole discretion to decide which electoral votes from a given state should be counted. While pro-Trump electors in some states, Joe Biden won, have symbolically cast their own ballots, experts say those votes carry no legal weight. The Republican complaint claims that part of the 1887 Electoral Count Act should be declared unconstitutional, as it clashes with the 12th Amendment. The lawsuit claims that amendment contains the exclusive dispute resolution mechanism, including that Vice President Mike Pence determines which state of electors' votes count or neither for that state. Legal scholars quickly dismissed the Republican lawsuit as hopelessly far-fetched. Election law expert Rick Hansen of the University of California at Irvine tweeted, "No, this won't work." Joshua Geltzer, executive director of Georgetown University's Institute for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection, wrote, "The lawsuit will go nowhere." Georgia State University law professor Anthony Michael Crace tweeted, "This is insane." Spokespeople for Mike Pence's office did not immediately respond to CNBC's request for comment. Some House Republicans have stated they will challenge the election results when Congress meets to count the Electoral College votes on 6th of January. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, has reportedly urged his caucus not to make similar objections. Any objections to the electoral votes must be submitted in writing and signed by at least one House of Representatives and one Senate member. If an objection arises, the two chambers consider the objection separately. The Trump campaign and several of the president's allies have launched dozens of attempts to challenge the election result in numerous swing states. None of those legal efforts has succeeded in invalidating votes for Joe Biden or flipping the result of any state's presidential elections. The U.S. Supreme Court earlier in December rejected a bid from Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton to sue four key swing states over changes they made to voting procedures. Donald Trump had called that lawsuit the big one.